It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
we certainly receive complaints directly now. That actually is an area where the ground rule, so to speak, will be changing in the not-too-distant future. As of right now, the Office of Consumer Affairs within the Department of Agriculture Consumer Services is the state consumer complaint clearinghouse. As of July 1 of 2012, our office will be the consumer complaint clearinghouse.
Dave Irvin, Chief and Senior Assistant Attorney General in the Consumer Litigation Section, explains the role of his office in safeguarding the public from consumer law violations and enforcing state and federal laws that protect consumers. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn about how the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has updated its 25-year-old guidance on how employers may use arrest and conviction records in their employment decisions. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 170, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. In bipartisan fashion, by a vote of 4-1, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission has issued a revised guidance on the application of Title VII to criminal records. The review confirms the core principles in the earlier guidances, including the presumption that criminal record policies have a disparate impact based upon race and national origin, the three business necessity factors, age of the offense, seriousness of the offense, and relationship to the job contained in the 1987 policy, the conclusion that across-the-board exclusions usually violate the law, and the prohibition against considering arrests that have not led to convictions. The new guidance is enormously important for both workers and employers because it updates and clarifies the EEOC standards. The policy provides more direction and information to the public using many examples. Firing existing employees with no performance or safety issues because a new employer takes over a business and learns of a record when conducting background checks of the workforce is a violation. Online applications that kick people out when they indicate that they have a criminal record also is a violation. The new policy provides guidance on how criminal record policies should be designed to comply with the law. It emphasizes that employers should distinguish between different jobs and different offenses, provide time limits for disqualifications, and recommends that employers consider individual circumstances. It identifies the factors that ought to be considered, such as employment history, rehabilitation, and age at the time of conviction. It also recommends a process by which an individual's circumstances should be considered, including employer notification to the applicant that he may be rejected based on his criminal record, an opportunity for the applicant to respond, and employer consideration of what the applicant has said in his own behalf. The policy endorses as a best practice the fair hiring process adopted in many states and cities, which removes the criminal background check from the job application and delays the inquiry until later in the hiring process. Overall, EEOC's new guidance is a very welcome development which educates employers who have not known about or complied with the law. It also gives workers who have made mistakes another chance to participate in the workforce and support their families and themselves. The new guidance can be found at www.nelp.org. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Lax versus Bottled Gas Corporation. In February 1970, Bottled Gas sued Hanno Lax for the purchase price of a gas-fired tobacco curing barn, as well as for the gas purchased by Lax to operate the barn. Lax denied the claim because the barn had been inoperative since delivery and countersued for the value of tobacco lost and destroyed because of the negligent installation of the barn. The court entered summary judgment for Bottled Gas on its claim for gas, and a jury returned a verdict for Lax on his claim for negligence. On motion of Bottled Gas, the court set aside the jury verdict because of a disclaimer of liability for negligence in the contract. On appeal, the Supreme Court of Virginia reversed, noting that the disclaimer was in print of the same size, style, and color as that used elsewhere in the contract. No method was used to reasonably call attention to the disclaimer, and due to this, the disclaimer was ineffective as a matter of law. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Lax versus Bottled Gas Corporation is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We are here at the offices of the Virginia Attorney General, and we are speaking with Dave Irvin. He is Chief and Senior Assistant Attorney General in the Antitrust and Consumer Litigation Section. Dave's duties has been prosecuting suspected violations of the Virginia Consumer Protection Act, the Virginia Antitrust Act, the Consumer Finance Act, and the Solicitation of Contributions Law. During his time at the Attorney General's office, Dave has been the lead counsel on cases involving, among other, advanced fee loan fraud, usury, charitable solicitation fraud, and deceptive advertising. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Would you tell our listening audience, in general terms, what is the role of the Attorney General's office to protect the public and to enforce state and federal consumer protection laws?
Our general role is that we are one of the government entities that has authority to enforce state and federal consumer protection laws. We obviously try to go after the largest problems that we can see. We try to go after problems where there is systematic or a pattern or practice problem as opposed to an isolated incidence where the law may have been broken. As you noted earlier, we enforce the Virginia Consumer Protection Act, the Solicitation of Contributions Law, Virginia Consumer Finance Statutes, and the Virginia Antitrust Act. So those are the primary statutes we enforce. There are probably a total of 35 to 40 total statutes that we enforce.
Well, and in particular, the Virginia Consumer Protection Act covers consumer protection in general, and then it also, as you noted, incorporates or is incorporated by probably 30 or 35 other laws. Obviously, the Attorney General's office doesn't have the resources to enforce them all. So how do you decide what areas you're going to focus on?
We have to make decisions based upon where we have information that violations may be occurring, and that's based primarily on the complaints that we receive, complaints that other state and federal agencies receive. Most of the complaints that we end up taking a look at are filed with the Virginia Office of Consumer Affairs, but we may ultimately get complaints from a variety of different sources.
And what are some of those other sources, just so the public can know to whom they can or should complain so that possibly word would get to the office of the Attorney General?
Sure. We'll typically, when we're looking, investigating a particular company, we will attempt to obtain complaints filed with the Better Business Bureau. If it's and for the others, depending on the subject matter, if it's a company that is licensed, regulated by the Virginia Bureau of Financial Institutions, for example, a title loan company, a payday loan company, a mortgage lender, we would be contacting the Virginia Bureau of Financial Institutions to receive those complaints. The Federal Trade Commission, if it were a do not call sort of violation, or any other licensing state or federal agency that may regulate this particular industry or business area.
And does the Office of the Attorney General also take complaints directly from the public, or do you prefer that the people first complain to the Office of Consumer Affairs or some of the other agencies that you just mentioned?
We certainly receive complaints directly now. That actually is an area where the ground rules, so to speak, will be changing in the not-too-distant future. As of right now, the Office of Consumer Affairs within the Department of Agriculture Consumer Services is the state consumer complaint clearinghouse. As of July 1 of 2012, our office will be the consumer complaint clearinghouse. That being said, even though we're not the clearinghouse, we certainly receive a fair number of complaints and certainly will sometimes act upon the complaints that we receive, although as a general rule, complaints should be filed as of this date with either one of the other state or federal agencies.
That's very interesting news, and obviously July 1 is coming up just around the corner. What are the plans to, I guess, publicize that change to the public? Is this information going to be on the Attorney General's website? Is it going to be made public in other manners?
I'm sure it will be made public in a variety of different matters, obviously, on our website, I would imagine, news releases, et cetera, all to get the word out that where you go to file a complaint has changed. And July 1 being around the corner, there is a lot being done on a daily basis to prepare our office and to prepare the Office of Consumer Affairs for that pending change.
Would you tell our listening audience what have been some of the recent successes that the Office of the Attorney General has had in enforcing state and federal consumer protection statutes? I know there have been several highly publicized settlements that have been reached by the office. Would you tell us about those?
Over the past couple of years, our primary focus has been on mortgage-related issues, and that's certainly largely because of just the economy, and that has been a focal point of most consumer protection offices around the country. Our focus has been on participating in the mortgage servicing investigation and settlement, and also being active and bringing cases, enforcement actions under our state's foreclosure rescue, foreclosure prevention law. That law prohibits any sort of a foreclosure prevention company that is offering to assist clients in receiving a loan modification. It prevents them from collecting any sort of an advance fee before they actually perform the services that they have contracted to render. And that law, we have now brought, I believe it is four different lawsuits against loan modification companies that have violated that provision of the law and have concluded three of those lawsuits and have been able to provide some restitution to consumers through those efforts. Other of those matters are still continuing.
Now, when you bring a lawsuit like that, what type of relief can the Office of the Attorney General obtain for the public? Can you get injunctive relief to get the judge to order that the practice stop? Can you get money damages or refunds for the consumer? Are both possible? What relief is available?
As a general rule, we can obtain injunctive relief to make the conduct stop. That is certainly usually the first priority, is to make the wrongful conduct, the illegal conduct, stop. We also can obtain restitution for injured victims, or we can obtain judgments for restitution for injured consumers. We can obtain attorney's fees to reimburse the state for the cost of investigating and litigating the action. And in some instances, we can obtain civil penalties that will be used to pay for some of our future consumer protection efforts. Those can be deposited into something we have called a revolving fund and used to support future consumer protection efforts.
So that essentially this year's bad guys could, in theory, be the ones who contribute to actions against next year's and subsequent year's bad guys?
That is absolutely correct.
Now, earlier this year in January, I know the Attorney General's office reached a settlement with car title lender Cashpoint, which apparently had been unlicensed for about 2 months after licenses were required. And I believe there was a settlement that refunded or was to refund around $600,000 to roughly 850 customers of the car title lender. That's roughly $700 per customer, which is certainly not bad. But the potential liability was probably much greater than that. So how does the Attorney General's office go about reaching a settlement like that? I don't want any tricks of the trade, but just in general terms, how do you do a case like that?
Generally, we are required, before we file suit, and I think we're only about one of 10 states that does have to do this, we have to give notice to the company that we are contemplating filing suit against them. That is something that is required by our Virginia Consumer Protection Act. So as a general rule, we're going to give them notice and give them an opportunity to come in and meet with us, either to explain to us that no violations have occurred or to discuss a possible resolution. Before we file suit, we will investigate. Most of the statutes that we enforce allow us to issue something called civil investigative demands, which is basically a fancy term for a subpoena, where we can engage in pre-complaint discovery and obtain information from the defendant or the potential defendant and investigate before we send that notice of violation letter.
So I gather you're basically doing discovery even before you have to file a lawsuit. Does that aid you in deciding how strong or weak the case is, what's likely to occur if you take it to trial, and maybe persuade the other side as to what happened if you went to trial?
Yes, definitely. I think it's definitely a useful tool for us. That way we can find out more and not have to go off and file suit where we don't have full information. So it is a useful tool that we will frequently use. It is not always used. We don't always issue pre-complaint discovery, but it is certainly a nice tool to have in our toolbox.
Well, again, other tools that I think the Attorney General has in your toolbox is some of the state and maybe federal consumer protection statutes, but certainly the state consumer protection statutes say that violating the act is possibly a class one misdemeanor. Is there ever any consideration to proceeding in a criminal matter, or is this done strictly on the civil side, or are both considered?
The authority that we have in this office is purely civil. The Virginia Consumer Protection Act, all of the statutes that I referenced before, our enforcement authority is civil. There certainly are other potential agencies out there for some of the statutes. Commonwealth's attorneys have some authority with, for example, the payday loan statute and other statutes where if you're engaging in that particular business and you're not licensed, that is a class one misdemeanor, I believe. But that sort of case would need to be pursued by the Commonwealth's attorney. As I say, our authority at this point, at least, is purely civil.
Now, earlier you mentioned the national mortgage settlement. Obviously, Attorney General Cuccinelli was one of the 49 attorneys general who brought that about. What do you see as the role of the Office of the Attorney General in the future to enforce or at least to monitor the terms of the national mortgage settlement?
Yeah, we are certainly very, very active in terms of making sure that the five servicers, large banks that have entered into those settlements, is that they adhere to the requirements and commitments that they've made there. So to that end, we receive inquiries and contacts from consumers across the state quite a bit who are looking to see if they are eligible. We're receiving information from folks who are looking to obtain a potential loan modification. We have escalation contacts with the various servicers that we're in contact with on a daily basis. The servicers themselves have a number of reporting requirements that they have to adhere to under the settlement, where they have to report to a national monitor, and then the national monitor will provide information to us. We also are in contact with representatives of the various servicers to find out where things stand, when offers are being made, following up when we see things in the paper indicating that letters have gone out. We've gotten indications recently, for example, that Bank of America and Wells Fargo have issued letters to the various folks around the country who are eligible for the underwater refinance component of the settlement. And I think I saw something on the news last night indicating that Bank of America is starting to roll out their principal reduction loan modifications, and that those offers are going to be going out by certified mail in the very near future, if not already.
The other issue that's really big and in the news has to do with something you mentioned earlier, payday lending, but in particular, internet payday lending. As I gather, internet payday lenders are not licensed in Virginia, so those loans are not legal in Virginia. Is there something that the Attorney General's office is possibly contemplating to do about this problem?
As you indicated, certainly payday lenders are required to be licensed, and a payday lender, even if they are operating through the internet, if they are engaged in business with a citizen in Virginia, they are required to be licensed with the State Corporation Commission. That is certainly something that we are looking at with an increasing amount of time, just because changes have been made to the payday lending industry in recent years that limit folks to one loan at a time. That led to a decrease in the number of actual payday lenders operating in the state. I believe it reduced the total number by as much as up to two-thirds. With that taking place, Virginia, obviously payday lending is legal here. We do have brick-and-mortar facilities that are licensed. I'm not aware of any internet payday lenders that are licensed. And that, as I say, is something that we're looking into and working with the State Corporation Commission as they look into that further.
Now, despite all of what we've talked about and all of the resources that are available, I'm sure that the Office of the Attorney General can touch only a small fraction of the consumer protection, perhaps consumer fraud, that's out there. So what can consumers do themselves to protect themselves against these types of things that we've been talking about?
The main thing that they can do certainly is to just to be mindful of all of the scams that are out there. Certainly, if they believe they have become a victim, or that they have been taken advantage of in a consumer transaction, they should file a complaint. But hopefully, an educated consumer is the best form of prevention that we can take, and that's certainly to get the word out of things not to do, not to be giving out your personal information, your bank account number, your Social Security number, credit card numbers, etc. When you're contacted by someone that you don't know, and they're contacting you by phone, by email, or on the internet, you should not provide your personal information to them, because most likely that is going to result in a scam of some sort.
Well, that's all very useful information. We have been speaking with Dave Irvin. He is the Chief and Senior Assistant Attorney General in the Antitrust and Consumer Litigation Section of the Office of the Attorney General, and we have been talking about the role of the Attorney General's Office in enforcing state and federal consumer protection statutes. Thank you so much for being on the show, Dave.
Thank you, Marty.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 60.2, which deals with unemployment compensation. Under Code of Virginia Section 60.2-623, information furnished to the Virginia Employment Commission shall not be published or be open to public inspection, and shall not be used in any judicial or administrative proceeding other than in the unemployment compensation case. So, it's like Las Vegas. What happens with the Virginia Employment Commission stays with the Virginia Employment Commission. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. When you buy something, you expect to be treated fairly, but what if you're not? Join us next week when consumer attorney Patty Anderson explains what consumer fraud is and what to do about it in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on November 10, 2010. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.